content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the January 2025 Walter Magazine. We begin with Wit and Whimsy. Jennifer Clifton Finds Her Voice Through Color and Pattern by Colony Little. Jennifer Clifton's colorful studio in ArtSpace is filled with paintings, custom-printed tea towels, and a collection of vintage cookie jars. The cookie jars are filled with nostalgic tokens like crayons, finger puppets, wax teeth, and cigarettes, clues to the personality behind her vibrant maximalist work. The anthropomorphic subjects in Clifton's paintings easily fit into this world of whimsy. In one, a toad wearing blue pants and a smart red ribbon around its neck holds a cane and a top hat posed in a vaudevillian stance in front of a chorus line of pink flamingos. Clifton's art is infused with charm, nostalgia, and a hint of rebellion, which makes her work attractive in galleries and restaurants. Clifton was born in Texas, then lived in Connecticut before her family moved to Louisiana. She spent her formative years there in a river town named Slidell. It was a difficult transition for Clifton, who was bullied mercilessly her first year in her new hometown. But in art, Clifton found joy and solace, something that she attributes to her mother. She'd work with her mother on craft projects, especially during the holidays. Her mother also brought her creativity into the elementary school, where there was no art teacher on staff. She volunteered and had a cart where she went from class to class, says Clifton. Seeing my mom understand how important that was to me subliminally got into my brain. Clifton went on to study art history at Florida State University with a minor in studio art. After graduation, she relocated to New Orleans, where she briefly worked in a gallery, then began teaching art in elementary schools. She moved to North Carolina to pursue a master's degree in counselor education at North Carolina State University. And she, her husband, and two children have called the state home ever since. Here she worked as an elementary school counselor for 20 years, a job inspired partly by her childhood experience with bullying. It was such a torturous experience, but it made me more empathetic, she says. I was good at helping kids feel encouraged and supported and helping them find their own strengths and resilience. Clifton retired in 2018, and with her children grown, she found a surplus of energy that needed a new home. She began to rekindle her love for art, combining oil paint, gouache, a form of watercolor, or charcoal with vintage wallpaper motifs. Since then, she's created an extensive body of work steeped in nostalgia for Victorian-era botanicals, animals, and vintage-style portraits. A lot of what came out during this process were anthropomorphic animals and whimsical things, because I wanted to focus on joy and strength, she says. Many of her portrait subjects are women, particularly carnival performers and pinup girls. While her subjects are often whimsical, her process is methodical. Clifton starts with a sourced image that she paints over in either oil paint or gouache. Her characters are then embellished with painstakingly placed glitter and sequins. As a final step, she'll place wallpaper over the subject and exactingly trace around it to reveal the subject underneath. A lot of people ask, why I don't paint on top? But you really can't paint on top of wallpaper because of its texture. It just doesn't adhere, she says. But I think embedding the subjects within the wallpaper really make it pop. Clifton's work is often humorous and is often including autobiographical notes. The glitter and sequins recall the intricately beaded costumes worn by carnival revelers and performers in New Orleans, for example. While she's very careful not to dictate interpretations of her work, she uses small details to lead viewers down a path of inquiry and discovery. Through her portraits of female performers, Clifton restores their agency, turning them from exotic objects of beauty and spectacle into symbols of ferocity and power. I find a lot of strength in these women who had to do ridiculous things for money, she says, pointing to a black-and-white portrait of a turn-of-the-century snake charmer that she's surrounded with a vibrant green Pucci-inspired pattern from the 1960s. Another portrait was inspired by a 1939 image of Elmira Humphreys wearing a bedazzled bikini, large headdress, and oversized gloves with fingers shaped like lightning bolts. Women dressed up for trade shows, like Miss Radio Queen, who was a model for electricity, says Clifton. I want my work to have a voice and theme around strength is beauty and beauty is strength. I'm looking back in time to find examples of that. Other interpretations are more cheeky. In the portrait of Sir Walter Raleigh she made for this month's Walter cover, for example, the cigarette in his cap and a candy necklace with the letter E for Queen Elizabeth hint to some of the infamous elements of the explorer's life. Clifton is now exploring ways in which she can extend the viewer's gaze into concepts and themes that aren't as fanciful as her animal and botanical works might suggest. I have a joyful side, but I have a dark side too, she says. Work from her latest series, Dazzling Ugly, is confrontation with discomfort. One work in progress features a ferocious, sequined lion poised to strike. In one corner of the canvas, an elephant's leg is just visible, hinting to an earlier casualty. In another corner of the canvas, a dog is lunging toward the feline aggressor. These works represent a demarcation between how she presented herself professionally for decades and how she's seen artistically. In my work as a counselor, I often had to be the cheerleader for staff and students, and that can be exhausting, she says. As an artist, I can be a more complex, genuine person. This article was edited for Time. Next, from the music department, folk revival. Jake Zerce's Fussel puts a modern spin on traditional music by David Menconi. About 12 years ago, Brendan Graves got a message from a new friend that caused him some uneasiness. It came from Jake Zerce's Fussel, a young man from Mississippi whom Graves knew from folklore work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. There, they'd been a part of a project compiling a box set of recordings for the Southern Folklife Collection. Fussel told Graves that he was a musician and was going to send some of his music. Graves operates Paradise of Bachelors Records, a small independent label in Chapel Hill, so this happens a lot. But it could be awkward with friends. What if Graves didn't like Fussel's music? Turns out it wasn't an issue. He sent a few songs he'd digitized from recordings on a cassette at home, and I was immediately blown away, Graves recalls. Even in this raw, basic state, what he'd done with these songs was amazing. They were traditional folk songs, but rendered unrecognizable and transformed. I still don't fully understand the alchemy of how Jake does it, but he transmutes every song into something else through his voice and reverence for the material. After Fussell moved up to Durham in 2014, Paradise of Bachelors went on to release his first four albums, all of them brilliant examples of folk music that's not at all musty. His 2017 release, What in the Natural World, felt like a breakthrough, with songs ranging from the Pete Seeger Birds classic, Bells of Rhymney, to delightful obscurities like the quirky folk chestnut, Have You Ever Seen Peaches Growing on a Sweet Potato Vine? Fussell's fifth album, When I'm Called, his first on a larger label, Fat Possum Records, is another wide-ranging set of songs from as recently as the mid-1980s and as far back as the mid-1740s. When I'm Called is an elegant album centered around Fussell's amiably drawling baritone voice, which goes down as smooth as a shot of good whiskey. The arrangements are spare, not a note out of place, rendered by a supporting cast of reliable quality signifiers for this style of music. Fussell's fellow folk artists, Robin Holcomb and Joan Shelley, Watch House Megaphone drummer Joe Westerland, and Studio Aces Tucker Martin and James Elkington, among others. Though his parents aren't musicians, Fussell is sort of in the family business. His father is a folklorist, while his mother is a teacher with an affinity for quilting. And they gave their son his distinctive middle name in honor of a potter in his native Georgia, Doris Xerxes, DX, Gordy, who was a hero and mentor to the family while Fussell was growing up. Growing up in a folklore household kind of got me into all this, Fussell says. My parents were more from the world of material craft culture, but it was a household with music in it, and my dad has worked with musically inclined people. So I grew up in that world, going to folk festivals and hearing field recordings. After years of song collecting, Fussell has voluminous material to draw from. When I'm Called is full of songs that feel brand new, despite their mostly ancient history, with some first brought to the public from the likes of folklore icon John Lomax and 1950s folk revival legend John Ritchie. I'm always kinda filing things away that I find in old songbooks or online archives, Fussell says. Just about everybody playing traditional music is also looking for source material. I'll slowly work up versions of songs. When it comes time to do a record, I'll think about songs that go together. I also compile bibliographies of it all. I like to be transparent about sources for anyone who might be curious about where something came from. Fussell's only formal music lessons were in elementary school when he learned to play bass, which led him to the guitar. There were always instruments around the house for his father's folklore work, so he taught himself to play. Tagging along on fieldwork excursions to hear artists like Georgia blues singer Precious Bryant and Piedmont blues guitar legend Etta Baker provided further inspiration. So did encouragement from his father's friend, musicologist Art Rosenbaum, who would become a mentor to Fussell before his death in 2022. When I'm Called is dedicated to Rosenbaum. I developed a style as I got deeper and deeper into playing and became more aware of different recordings, Fussell says. Art Rosenbaum was a big part of that. He knew tons of banjo and fiddle tunes, ballads, shanties. He bridged a lot of worlds. Whenever I had questions about something old and weird, he was who I'd call. For all his interest in songs, however, writing them himself doesn't hold much appeal for Fussell. Interpreting songs that are already out there and seeing where he can take them is an approach that suits him well. He's also an active member of the local music community, DJing the weekly Fall Line radio show Wednesday afternoon on Hillsboro low-power community station WHUP 104.7 FM when he's off the road. For the longest time, I thought music would be something just for me, private, he says. Whether I could make a living at it seemed so unlikely, an abstract dream. I worked day jobs for a long time, including as a fact checker in a liability insurance office, the most boring work imaginable, and doing highway traffic surveys. So I don't take it for granted. This area is a good place for a musician to live. You can dart in and out of local scenes, and everybody's cooperative, polite, and pretty cool. People here mostly get along. It's more a series of scenes than a scene, which is kind of nice. Next, Out on a Limb. The nonprofit Project Pando is working to support native trees in the Triangle, by Lori D.R. Wiggins. In 2010, Basil Camus joined his parents' tree service business, Leaf and Limb, as a partner with his father. They'd started the business in West Raleigh in 1997, primarily doing tree removal and trimming. It was a pretty small mom-and-pop type of business, says Basil, who'd spent the previous years working in finance and travel and studied economics at Duke University. Going into the family business, those skills didn't help me all that much. I had to figure everything out as I went, he says. But he's a fervent reader with big ideas, so he poured himself into growing Leaf and Limb. He learned web building and marketing, implemented safety programs, assessed financials, and researched other services that could help distinguish Leaf and Limb from its competitors. Each year brought new ideas and changes, Basil says. Between 2010 and 2019, those efforts helped grow the company into a profitable 50-employee operation, one of the largest of its kind in the state. But as the business grew, it also became hard for him to stomach. So much of our revenue was coming from tree removals. We'd cut down these gorgeous old oaks and pines to make way for someone's new lawn, he says. Through his work, he was learning about the complexities of soils and the fascinating role trees play in our ecosystem. His love and appreciation for trees and the environment was growing, but he felt he was contributing to the deforestation of Raleigh. I was questioning what I was doing with my career, what we were doing as a company, he says. We were destroying the very engine that drives the planet. So in 2017, Basil started shifting the business away from cutting down trees to focus on structural pruning, securing existing trees, planting new ones, and doing soil work instead. It not only aligned with his personal philosophies, but, he says, working with natural systems instead of against them also saves time, money, and manpower. By the end of 2019, tree cutting had shifted from 60% to 40% of Leaf and Limb's business. But to Basil, they hadn't gone far enough. I still felt like we were taking down too many trees, he says. We had to decide to just stop cutting trees altogether. So in 2020, the company made it official. They announced the change in a newsletter to their clients and shared a video on social media about the new no-cutting approach. Now we only care for trees, plant them, and teach people why they're important, says Basil. Alongside the shift in business, Basil's been spearheading environmental causes through Leaf and Limb's grassroots nonprofit, Project Pando. It's named after the giant 80,000-year-old colony of quaking aspen trees in Fish Lake National Forest in Utah, the largest in the world. Just like the roots of the trees in the Pando colony are all connected, we humans should understand that we are all connected. We share resources. And what's good for one is good for all, he says. Starting in 2017, the company offered paid days on the first Friday of every month for staffers to volunteer with local organizations. They'd organize food or sort clothes, whatever the nonprofits needed, but soon realized that they could have a bigger impact by targeting their efforts. We did more with our existing experience and resources when we volunteered with organizations like We Plant It Forward and Trees Across Raleigh, says Basil. Through that work, he saw a need for both more trees for planting and more people with the knowledge to help them thrive. So in 2020, Basil decided to focus Pando's efforts on collecting seeds from native trees, growing them into saplings, and distributing them for free within the community. Native trees like oak, longleaf pine, elderberry, and dogwood are uniquely suited to provide food and shelter to other native creatures, like birds and insects. A native oak, for example, can benefit around 1,000 insects, says Basil. To collect native seeds, Project Pando enlists hundreds of volunteers in the area. Through instructional videos, online tools, and tree identification outings, Project Pando teaches them how to recognize and gather the seeds of more than 80 species of native trees and shrubs that grow in North Carolina. The volunteers then take their seeds to one of 10 drop-off locations, including the Leaf and Limb headquarters, farms, and extension service sites. The seeds are then taken to Project Pando's growth sites, a 2-acre plot at Leaf and Limb's property, and a 16-acre site at Triangle Land Conservancy's Bailey and Sarah Williamson Preserve in southeast Raleigh. There, the seeds are planted and raised in air pruning boxes. They can hold hundreds of saplings, but have mesh bottoms that stop them from getting too big because the roots stop growing when they hit the air. Depending on the species, once the trees reach about 6 to 36 inches, they're donated to volunteers to plant at home or in their neighborhoods, as well as to schools and nonprofit organizations like We Plant It Forward and the Walnut Creek Wetland Center on a first-come, first-served basis. We don't do the tree planting. We're more of a provider of tree materials. We're creating this pipeline of native trees to help other people heal our local ecosystems, says Basil. Thanks to these efforts, about 15,000 trees were given away in 2024. Last spring, Basil released a book, From Wasteland to Wonder, which holds the blueprint for their nonprofit, as well as essays about the importance of native trees and how to support them in our urban and suburban landscapes. Available for free on Leaf and Limb's website, he hopes it will encourage folks to copy his model and cultivate native trees in other areas. Quote, "We just want to grow this idea and give it away," end quote. This article was edited for Time. And from our calendar, January 24th at 7:30 p.m., NC State Live's series Bistro and a Show offers a three-course fixed-price dinner at 1887 Bistro, followed by a performing arts event at Stewart Theater. This month, they'll feature Matthew Whitaker, a renowned jazz musician who's collaborated with stars like Jean Baptiste and performed on stages around the world. We have a rich history of presenting jazz greats, and Matthew Whitaker fits right into that legacy. His talent has even prompted a scientific study on his brain, says Liza Wade Green, interim director of NC State Live. I can't wait for our community to experience his awe-inspiring music. The New Orleans jazz-inspired menu at 1887 Bistro includes jambalaya, boudin balls, and beignets. After the performance, guests can stick around for a chat with Whitaker, who's been blind since birth, to learn about his journey and artistic process. Tickets begin at $35. Go to live.arts.ncsu.edu for more information. Lastly, on January 31st at 7:30 p.m., you can catch folk singer Iris Dement at A.J. Fletcher Theater, the opening act of Pinecone's 2025 Down Home Concert Series. No doubt we can expect to hear some of her most beloved tunes, including Let the Mystery Be and Our Town. Tickets begin at $18. And you can visit pinecone.org for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.